You're listening to Russell Brand on Recovery. With me is Mark Dempster. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Russell.
I was about to call you a doctor, but of course you're not a doctor.
No, I'm not a doctor.
What the hell are you then?
I'm an addiction specialist or therapist in central London.
What qualifies you to be an addiction therapist?
Oh, well, I've done various qualifications, family therapy, just generic counselling, trauma therapy. So I've got various, what's happened basically since I became drug and alcohol free, I went like a lunatic.
Oh, you yourself, hold on a minute. Yeah. You yourself were a drug addict and alcoholic.
Yes. There is that.
Poacher turned gamekeeper.
Poacher turned gamekeeper for sure. Well, smuggler turned gamekeeper, I guess.
You was a smuggler?
Yeah, for several years until I...
Any good, I suppose?
Well, I was, reasonably okay, competent for a while, but as the addiction progressed and the drug use escalated, of course...
Well, it even ruined your smuggling.
Yes.
I could have been one of the best smugglers in the world, but...
but it all went pear-shaped due to the smack.
You don't have to put on a Scottish accent. You're the most Scottish person I've ever met. Hold on, mate. Yeah. You were smuggling from where to where and what substance? Just out of curiosity.
Initially, it started with India, bringing hash back. Charis, as it's called in Manali in the north of India. So it started off just sort of half a kilo of charis, and then it escalated.
How
to
do you pack it?
Oh, no, I wasn't. We were just, back then, that was like years ago, we were just flinging it in suitcases.
And
it was really much, much easier in them days. And also, we were going to Schiphol, we were going to Amsterdam, which is a much easier airport, because if you get caught then, you only got a smaller sentence. So
what then, get a ferry from Amsterdam?
Yeah, at Hook of Holland, yeah, to Harwich, and then come across that way and be the drunk Scotsman and get through and just...
Well, that, the drunk Scotsman, I don't think, is a good persona for a drug smuggler. That's an eye-catching, worrying cliche. What you went for?
I was sometimes the drunk thing, and they just used to just go like, go on, you know, like...
It wasn't drunk.
Yeah, I was just, yeah. And then it went from there, of course, as the drugs changed. And then I was in Spain. I wound up in jail in Spain for a while because we used to bring carloads of Moroccan hash from Spain, from the south of Spain. And then it went into heroin eventually.
So if you need any advice, we've got Mark Dempster. Heroin smuggler, when you're doing that, is it smaller quantities use the internal pockets?
Internal pockets, all up my bum, really. But the packaging was, you know, because you've got to put it in, at the time I used to put it in Indian balloons rather than condoms.
Classy.
And then we used to just to sit there, lie back, bicycle, and just push another ball and another parcel up, and then another.
How many could you get up?
I got about four, equivalent to 400 grams, so about half, just less than half a kilo. But with the packaging, it probably winds up about 700 grams.
How much money would you make?
A lot of that, of course, this is all driven because I was a raging heroin addict at the time. So I would try to sell, you know, if I get maybe half a kilo, which is 18 ounces, I'd try and sell maybe 12 or 13 of them ounces, and then sell them for £1,000 each, and that would be maybe 13, 14 grand, and then go and do it again.
I'm kind of impressed by you. Did you not have trouble regulating your bowel movements, given that you were a heroin addict and sticking stuff up your bum?
Aye, but you just, of course, you're constipated most of the time when you're a heroin addict.
Because you were using addicts, you never...
Using heroin addicts.
So that bum was basically, that's all it was used for.
Thank God it wasn't used for anything else. I'll tell you some stories about that another time. It was...
Don't hold back now, mate. You've come across as a monster. But to be honest, we will talk more, and I hope that this is a relationship that gets to develop. But the astonishing fact is that in spite of being for many, many years a terrible heroin addict and a drug smuggler, you are now a Harley Street drug consultant.
Absolutely.
That's reality, isn't it?
Yeah, and it is the reality. And sometimes I still pinch myself. I think, how the hell did I get from there to here?
I don't think you're going to notice a pinch the way you've treated your body. You'd have to put airbrush up your bum. Okay, so listen, okay. Mark, the function of this show is for us to, as you know, I myself am in recovery from addiction, as you know, no one could have failed to have noticed. My smuggling career is not nearly as impressive as yours. Little pipettes of heroin up the old bum, squeeze them in and out with no trouble, just for simple personal use. But nonetheless, I would still like to be able to offer advice to people that are suffering from addiction issues. And we've got some callers lined up. And one of the things I'm keen to discuss, Mark, is the full spectrum of addiction, from the severe Glaswegian hard cases with a bottom full of magic via the sort of Essex boy chasing the dragon and two of each for a while, the brown and white combo, right to people that are having issues with the social media, food, sex, technology, because we can test, do we, that addiction actually is the condition rather than its object.
Yeah, absolutely. Addictions, so the actual, I mean, the symptoms are the drugs and alcohol or the gambling or the internet porn.
I just want to sort the feng shui out slightly so we've got better eye contact. Come here, mate.
Okay.
Sorry. Cool. I just want you to be like that and so that you can see me and talk. Is that good for you?
It's great, man. Okay. Yeah, cool.
So the symptoms, go on, you were saying this.
So the symptoms are, the outward symptoms are the manifestation of whether it's the drugs or the alcohol or the gambling. But the addictive process is the fact that the person's looking for a dopamine uptake. They're looking to try and get more dopamine to the brain. They don't know that they're doing that. They just want to get high or they want to change the way they feel. But fundamentally, what is underneath it all is this pursuit to enhance the reward system. And that can be used, and as you just said, Russell, it's like there's a whole variety, there's a whole spectrum of different types of people in society that use different things to do that.
I mean, it makes sense to me, because when I think about my own journey through addiction and recovery, I can see that when I was a kid, the way that I was watching TV was not normal. Excuse me. The way that I was eating chocolate weren't normal. Then when I started to look at porn as a teenager, that weren't normal. And then when I started to drink and take drugs, that weren't normal. It was all based on this undercurrent, as you say, of feelings, which you now know, being a professional in this field and something of an expert, that you now know that what I was trying to deal with was a dopamine deficiency. That's like the biochemical way of, a neurological way of looking at it. The spiritual way of looking at it is there's a spiritual malady or a lack of connection. But in a way, it becomes ultimately semantics, don't it, Mark? Because we're all describing the same thing, a sense of lack, a sense of something missing, a sense of not having a connection.
Yeah, and that hypersensitivity, we've got to go back to that hypersensitivity and that sense of being raw, and the mind that just, the berating mind, the critical mind that just will not shut up, that just keeps on going on and on, which often is set up by early childhood traumas. Now, there's a whole school of thought about whether it's learnt behaviour or whether it's environmental, and, you know, like whether we're born an addict or whether we're, you know, but there's certainly this thing about predispositions. And
that's an interesting point. And one of the things I'd like to do on our call-in show is talk to people with a variety of addiction issues from across that spectrum, from the, you know, like in a way, there's no point in judging the severity, because the pain you feel, whether it's like some sort of craving for pornography or a craving for opiates, is still pain that we're dealing with. We can go to our first caller now. It's our first caller is Jay. Jay wants to talk to us about his cannabis addiction. You all right, Jay?
I am, yeah. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure, mate. Tell us what's going on. What's your problem?
Well, it sounds trivial. A lot of people do tend to think that you can't be addicted to cannabis, and you can't be. It's basically only hard drugs that you can be addicted to. But like I've just heard you say then, I think addiction, no matter what you're addicted to, is addiction. The battle inside your own mind is going to be there no matter what you're addicted to. For me, I've smoked cannabis for 20 years. I suppose I started when I was younger. It was the cool thing to do, but at the same time, it made me feel good about myself. It made me block out things. When I was younger, it wasn't really an addiction, I wouldn't think, because I think when you're younger, you don't really build up that tolerance, and you're able to, you have more stuff going on in your life. So it makes it easier not to smoke it.
Well, are you suffering now, Jay? Are you in, like, is your cannabis use causing you problems? Is it difficult for you in your relationships, in your job, in your work?
It's caused me issues throughout my life in every single thing I've done, every relationship, every job I've had. You know, I'm not.
So why now, Mark? Why do you want to stop taking it now?
Well, I'll be honest, I actually packed in last Friday, and it's now been a week since I packed in, and I'll be honest, it's destroyed my confidence, because I'm constantly battling with myself. I know what I've been doing is wrong, and it makes me feel, you lose your confidence, and you know that you're better than what you're doing.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, Mark. All right, Jay. Let's not try and do the solution and the problem all in one conversation. Now, Mark, who's with us, is a drug counsellor. Mark, what do you think about what Jay's saying so far?
Jay, I completely identify with your plight as well. And I was, just to give some identity, I was psychologically addicted to cannabis for years before I moved on to other drugs. Now, the problem with cannabis is it's looked upon within society, it's normalised and it's minimised. And in some respects, I think cannabis use is a much more difficult, cannabis addiction is much more difficult to deal with and to get clean from, because the way that people view it in society, it's like, oh, what are you worrying about? It's only cannabis, it's only thing. But I know that it breeds apathy. Think about it. When people are smoking cannabis, they don't do anything, do they? There's no sense of purpose. They just carry on in the same loop year in, year out. So I think it's brilliant, Jay, that you've gave up last week. And what I would say about that is, you know, don't lose hope. Just keep a day at a time, really. I'd say definitely get involved in some fellowship activity, wherever you are, whatever part of the country you are, please get involved. And even just go along and just listen to other people, because it's really important for you to make connections with other people who are in the... There is a fellowship just for that too, for cannabis. So I think doing that and continuing to do that, but also then bringing in other things into your life, you know, like, you know, getting maybe, you've got to release dopamine, you've got to get your dopamine uptake, so maybe doing things like exercise alongside, and
that's something I've really thought about, yeah. Definitely.
And Jay, you do sound like you're suffering a bit. And like Mark said, I remember actually thinking about it. For years, I was obsessively using cannabis. I used to carry a little pipe around. People thought it was an affectation. I was always banging away on them buds. And like, you know, it's in a, like we've been saying, Jay, the substance itself isn't super important. It's the reason that you're doing it and the fact that it's getting out of control. And I'd like to echo what Mark said, is that you know, there are fellowships that are particular, and our sort of belief around addiction is that firstly you need to find a connection with people that understand what you're talking about, and you're doing that right now because me and Mark understand what you're talking about, but you need to continue that, and you need to address what are the issues that for your use in the first place,
and self-esteem and stuff is way, and find ways to raise the self-esteem, Jay, because what's happened for years and years, as you've just said, you've been beating yourself up, you know, like, because you've not been able to succeed to stop it. You've probably for years been wanting to stop it and saying, oh, right, I'll give up such and such a time, I'll stop then. But then you keep on doing it, which reinforces that negative view of yourself, that negative perspective. So... Sorry, Jay. I know you're...
No, I was going to say, it wears you down. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
It does, because I've spent the last, you know, 10, 15 years setting myself goals and packing it in, you know, just even for a couple of days even. And then you start again because something in your life triggers it, you know, and you use it. There are triggers in life that, as you know... That
what in your life?
Do it again. What in my life did you say, sorry?
Yeah.
I think for me, without, you know, going into it too personal, I lost an abusive parent when I was in my early teens. I think from then I didn't deal with the grief of what happened, and I don't even think I've dealt with it now. And I think I kind of worry that when I do actually pack it in, I have now, but the emotions.
Yeah.
I'm already. I've been packed in for a week, and as much as it's psychological, I can. It's actually quite a physical addiction as well. I believe. I'm not sure if you don't hear about people saying this. People don't believe it is physical. But for me, I barely slept all right for like a week. And then I'm up and down emotion-wise. I can't, you know, I don't know what day it is barely. I am getting there. But I do worry that, I worry what's next. I worry where my life will go with a clear mind. And I worry that I'm going to have to deal with these issues head on and stop blocking them out. You know, it's...
Yeah. Well, Jay, I feel for you, mate. And I also recognise what you're saying and how difficult it can... I remember how difficult it is to let go of using. But as... What I think we're saying is that there are communities that you can become a part of. Is that something you've looked into? Because we, off air, offline, we can direct you towards that.
I'll be honest. Around me, the problem is, everywhere you look now, people are smoking cannabis.
Yeah.
Now, when I started, obviously, I had friends who started as well. Now, at certain times, we've all sat together and we've got stoned, and then we said, you know what? What are we doing? Let's pack in. And then we've all tried packing in. And, you know, sometimes maybe one's lasted longer than the other. You know, we've always ended up smoking it again. But around me, I've got friends who smoke it but want to pack in as well. And it's good to talk to them. But at the same time, the fact that they are still smoking it means I can't really use them for support. Because you know, I go around to get support, and the next minute we're sat there skinning up.
Don't bloody get support off other people that are using it, Mark. What should he do?
Absolutely, absolutely. The thing is here about on your own, you don't have the power. This is the difficulty with this stuff. When you're trying to stop an addictive process like that, when you're continually doing it, you're powerless. This is the thing about it. When you're in it, your mind is telling you need to get more, you're rationalised, you're getting craving, you're justifying it, the behaviour's all there. So it affects you in so many different areas. That's why you need to get a power greater than you. Now, I'm not talking about an existential thing here. I'm not, you know, but however, if you've got some concept of an existential thing, that's cool. That's really
He's
good.
He's talking about God there.
I'm talking about God, right? I'm talking about God.
Do you
God.
Believe in God, incidentally? I mean, don't want to get too heavy-handed with that. Do you, Jay?
I have some very deep views on that. I wouldn't necessarily say I believe in God, but okay. I do believe in...
You've got belief in a power, have you?
I have, yeah.
Well, that's
yeah.
beautiful. That's a bloody good start.
But also as a group, to go, this is why me and Russell were saying this about, to get a social network of people. This is where we go. We go and we're involved in a social network continually. And we do that 2 or 3 times a week, every week. And I've done that religiously for nearly 20 years because I need a power of people. Because inside a meeting or in a group of people who are all doing the same thing, You hear, you get hope, you get inspiration, you're able to talk about the exact nature of your addiction, what your thoughts are. Sorry,
Jay, you're going to have to do that. You're going to Jay, we're going to contact you in a minute and give you some information offline that we can't give you online. And what I recommend is that you follow that, and I'd like to talk to you again in a week's time. But here's the basic precy of the situation is. Keep it in the day. Get support of other people that understand your problem and are not using. And then we'll talk again. You don't have to sort it all out at once, mate. It sounds like you're dealing with some pretty deep-rooted stuff and some sort of pretty painful adolescent things. And that's not going to be unravelled. As I've heard Mark say before, if it takes you 20 years to get into the woods, it's going to take you a little while to get out of there. But don't panic. And well done for calling us, mate. And it's very brave what you've done. Try to get to bed tonight without drinking or using. There's no point doing some other drug, mate, because what we're ultimately trying to address is the problem behind it, this sense of whatever you're lacking, definitely. Whatever you're missing. So we're going to give you a call back with a little bit of information. Thanks very much, mate. You take it easy, Jay. Well done.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Well done, mate. You're a brave man.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Take it
easy.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. You too.
Bye, mate. Ah, there he is, old Jay. So you do get that identification. As soon as you sort of hear anybody talking about addiction, there's an immediate sense of like, he sounded down, didn't he, the fella?
Oh, I did, yeah. And he's stuck in the addiction and he can't get out and he's got no hope. He's got nobody shining the torch on how to get out of the woods, really, isn't it? And he's like...
I like your woods metaphor. So we're in the woods. It took us 20 years. I might use it in front of your face. I don't know what you think I'll do when I'm away from here. I'm not running another radio show on the side. I'd like to see it. We're in and out of the woods. Now, listen, mate, I've got some. The other thing that we want to discuss are the permutations and various presentations of this condition. We've been approached by a woman called Charlotte. She wants to talk about sex addiction. Charlotte, what exactly is it that you want to talk to us about? Hello there, Charlotte.
I am.
Do you feel all right? Do you feel a bit nervous? You okay?
Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's just, I'll tell you how many people will listen to you at this moment, about 3. So don't worry about that. There's nothing to worry about. And you're just talking to other people who understand you and care about you. So just say what's on your mind, mate, and we'll help you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, I'm somebody that obviously suffers from sex addiction. One of the things I wanted to discuss was, obviously it's not addiction like drugs and alcohol.
You've got a bad signal, you. Go somewhere. Where are you in your gaff? You're somewhere with a bad signal.
Do you know, I'm in Canterbury at college, so let me just move.
Get away from that bloody cathedral. That's the problem. It's the spire.
Can you hear me now?
A bit less Chaucer and a bit more flying saucer. That's what we need out of you. Now, move to somewhere where we've got quite well, but there's no rush. Just walk to somewhere where you know there's a good signal happen to be on the line with people who talk pretty much incessantly for a living.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, but don't do that because you're on the radio, so don't do that sort of can you hear me now thing like a nan. How old are you, Charlotte, anyway?
I am 30.
You're 30 years old. You're saying you're suffering from sex addiction. If you don't mind me asking, what do you mean by that?
Right, so, okay, really bad repeated patterns of behaviour. So I would use sex, basically, as therapy, as medicine.
Bloody hell, mate, that's a bit heavy. Sex medicine, what do you mean by that? Yes. What are you doing? Sleeping with people that you don't know, that you do know? Talk us, what's the problem?
Yeah, exactly. So sleeping with people I don't know, especially using it as an escapism. So if I was going through a stressful time or something traumatic was happening, I would use it to forget, basically.
Yeah. So you're just medicating. The thing is there, Charlotte, you're just medicating. You're just using it as a medication. You're just, whatever feelings, whatever uncomfortable feelings are coming up for you, immediately, that's your default position is go to the sex.
Is it working? Is the sex taking your mind off things?
Sorry?
Is it working, this sex addiction?
No, I actually entered into the 12-step program. I actually joined a wonderful organisation called Sex Addiction Anonymous.
Yeah.
And I've actually come out the other side, really. I still struggle, you know, obviously, with some days are harder than others, but I feel like I've got a lot better. But in the moment, it helped me in the moment. You know, it was a bit of an illusion, really.
Yeah, and within that, did you get a sponsor? And did you get, you know, like, did you set bottom lines and stuff? Have you started to go down that process with the fellowship?
Yes, I did get sponsors, yes, but I found it quite troublesome, the actual program, just because you do have to obviously go to a higher power. You have to believe in God. And I found that quite difficult because for people that don't carry a faith, it's like, where do they go?
What do you believe? I'm just curious, like, what do you believe in? You believe in a sort of an atheistic, meaningless, spontaneous universe of random chance?
No, I actually believe in God myself.
What's the bloody problem then, Charlotte?
Yeah. What it is, I'm a counsellor in training. And
well, you want to shape up, love. Because like...
He's playing me, Charlotte. He's playing me.
This is coming up a lot. And actually, there's quite a lot of people saying, well, I'm relapsing because, you know what? I actually don't believe. I don't believe in these higher powers. Yeah. And that where I kind of think, is there actually a gap here that we're missing?
But also, Charlotte, you can use the group. The group, right? Forget even that it's something existential. Even if you just use the program, say the program that you're part of at the moment, if you think about that program is a set of tools of behavioural change. It's like you're a counsellor, trainee counsellor, cognitive behavioural therapy, right? I mean, this came up 30 years. They created this program 30 years before CBT was even invented. But fundamentally, it's a process of behavioural change. It's saying, I am powerless. I am powerless over this behaviour. I'm therefore going to ask, I'm going to change it. I'm going to try and change this. I know it's irrational. I know that it's, and you're disputing some of the thoughts that are going on in your head. So it's all the same elements of CBT, But you're basically what you're basically doing. It's clouded in the cloak of the 1930s when it was formed, because it had sort of temperance type influences a way back. However, yeah, you can, lots of atheists, agnostics, stay sober and clean a day at a time by using the program as a template.
Yes, I would like to say that it doesn't, like, you know, myself, I believe in God, but what I think, I heard someone say once who is an atheist, he said that look, at the moment, and he was talking about drugs and alcohol in this instance, he was saying, look, there's all these people in this room, like, you know, for example, like, just take this room now, there's me, I was a crack and heroin addict for a long time, there's Mark, who's a sort of world-class smuggler, crackhead, heroin addict, and somehow Mark, for 20 years, hasn't used, and for 13 years, I haven't used. Now, whatever it is that's changed us from situation A to situation B, that's a power. Now, if you're an atheist, you don't look at that in a sort of a theistic sense, or you attach no belief of divinity to that, and that doesn't really matter. The important thing is that something happens when you surrender to the idea that you're powerless over this condition, when you seek the support of other people, and you make a decision that you are no longer the author and the primary authority in this situation. And I think that you can make those decisions regardless of what your beliefs in divinity are. In a way, that's all just ornamentation. In a way, Charlotte, it's a bit of a red herring. And actually, I think a lot of people that nominate this sort of, oh, I don't want to believe in a higher power thing, I think that actually it's very clear, even in the 1930s jargon, a god of your understanding. So it's like, you know, that's up to you. That's literally up to you. And you yourself have said you believe in a higher power. Now, how is your, today, how is your addiction affecting you? Are you okay today? Are you using today? Are you feeling miserable, lonely, discontented?
No, I'm good. I began a long-term relationship last year.
Ain't that bloody long, Charlotte? It's only been a year, but I'm like, but congratulations. I mean, that's really good. That's really positive. I'm being sort of cheeky because I'm a spirited and a humorous man, but I am taking what you're saying very seriously, and I think it's brilliant that you're in a relationship.
It's really good, and I'm able to manage it. I know what my triggers are. I definitely reflect a lot, and I process things. You know, I'm aware that they're happening, you know, so I'm able to address them, you know, accordingly. But I'm in a good place.
What do you think that Charlotte should do going forward, Mark?
I think, Charlotte, you should maybe continue, maybe go to the meetings, and but see it from a different perspective as well. See, you know, as me and Russell have just been talking about as well, just to not get bogged down in the language, right? Just use the program as a mechanism to keep you safe. Because what it's doing is it's giving you a set of guidelines just to live your life in a healthy way, isn't it?
Yes.
But I think also incorporating, like, you're doing a lot of counselling training and stuff like that, that's going to be really good for you. The fact is, we've always got to be learning. The five things, the Public Health England always say, the five things to positive mental health are connection with others, to always be learning, to be curious about life, exercise, to do like yoga or exercise, that's all really, really good for you as well, and altruism, to sort of give back in some type of way.
Well, are you doing some altruism?
Sorry?
Are you doing anything altruistic, philanthropic or charitable in your life?
Yes. I mean, I do quite a bit, actually. Sorry, I cancel clients for free.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's
really nice.
Yes, long term, I actually do want to set up a charity and actually sex addiction groups where people can come for free. Because again, that's another issue. But, you know, private healthcare, the NHS can sometimes be a bit expensive. So I actually want to try and open it up to people who can't afford those kind of services.
What else can you do on a more sort of daily basis, a sort of simpler basis? I mean, it's good to have a long-term goal, I appreciate that, but like for today, in terms of helping other people, do you think there's more you could be doing? Do you think that's part of it? Because when I look at my own condition, the self-centered aspect of it is one of the first things that kicks in. It's because, like, a lot of my time I'm just obsessing about my bloody self. I mean, I'm doing it now, sort of, really.
Yes, Charlotte, he's not lying. I can see him. He's in his head thinking about himself. But yeah, what do you think, Charlotte, from what Russell said?
Yes, I mean, I think it's actually really important to concentrate on the on the todays, to be honest with you. And I do try as much as possible to help people, whether it's just giving them a listening ear, making sure as well that I'm available. I still do have my sponsor, even though I've kind of come out the other side. I try to maintain contact as much as possible for them.
I've got an idea. You're in Canterbury. I bet there's all sorts of bloody homelessness going on. I think that the very next homeless person that you see, that you should take for it's like a cup of tea and hang out with them for at least half an hour. Are you able to commit to doing that? And you're not allowed to tell anyone you did it when you get home.
Yeah.
No, I won't.
No, you've got to do it. Hold on a minute. You're saying it as if you're always taking homeless people for cups. I don't. I never tell people when I've took the homeless.
No, I have. You know, you kind of, if you're familiar ones, as awful as that sounds, in your local town centre.
I've got my familiar homeless. I'll give them a little, well, I went roller skating with a gang of them just yesterday. Yeah. Right, you've told us though, haven't you? So you've ruined that one. So like, but you've got to find. I say the next person. That's what I think. I'm going to do it as well. Right, yep. I'm going to try and do this, Russell. Don't forget as soon as you get out of the room. Yep. I'm going to try and do something nice for somebody, and I'm going to try not to get found out about doing it. Do you think you can do that, Charlotte? I bet there's someone. I bet, like, you're in Canterbury. I've not been there for a while, but I bet it's a...
Yeah, there's a few.
I bet it's a shithole, isn't it? Right, well, go on then. So try that, and you know what you've got to do. You've got to stay close to these fellowships, and you've got to stay out of self. And I think you're doing remarkably well, and thank you very much for your time and for your call. Mark, have you got anything you want to add, mate?
No, Charlotte, yeah, keep on going and keep stay strong in the relationship, and please stick to the bottom your bottom lines, you know, because otherwise you know what will happen. As soon as you open up that door again, they say one is too many, a thousand never enough. That thing of... As soon as you do it once, you've opened up the door. So just keep with what you're doing. You're doing brilliant.
Well done, Charlotte. Well done for reaching out. That's fantastic.
Oh, thank you, Russell. Thank you, guys.
See you later,
no
mate.
Worries.
Stay in touch with us. Go and help someone.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh. Do you think I wasn't mean to Charlotte then, was I, Mark?
No,
I'm worried about it. I'm feeling doubtful. I think I said the wrong thing. What did I do?
No, it's cool. It's cool.
Why am I like
this? Having a joke. You're having a joke.
No, it's too cruel to her. I'm worthless. I might as well do myself in. I might as well be hanging from a beam or from a poplar tree in a Billie Holiday song. It's probably a bad reference.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it, when we're talking to people with a diverse number of problems.
Yeah.
We spoke to Jay, this the cannabis situation, we spoke to Charlotte. Sex. She sounds like she's a bit further along, don't she?
Yeah, and she's obviously she's got herself to the fellowship. Jay's not got himself to the fellowship. He's not actually moved. Well, he's stopped, which is great. Jay's moved, right? He's moved. But Charlotte's been there. But then Charlotte's got put off by the whole God thing, right? Or whatever. But this is the thing that happens a lot, isn't it? People use the terminology sometimes. Oh, well,
incorrectly. To back up, I think, to neglect going forward. Now, what do you think about, like, intervention? Because in a way, when I think about myself getting clean, there was an interventionist aspect to it. Some people strolled right into my... it wasn't an addict, but I met the Chip Summers, who's a very big figure in the world of recovery. Great man, many years clean. He sort of like, in a way, him and another fella, who's still in my life now, who's not in recovery, John, they intervened in my life. Now, I've always felt very lucky that I had that because, you know, obviously the first thing that we have to do is admit our own powerlessness and our own unmanageability and that we're... can't help this condition, but I was lucky enough to have some people kick the crap out of me and make that decision on my behalf a little bit, and then of course I realised, hold on a minute, I can't keep living like this. So what do you think about interventions,
right, as in when people get round and the family get round and they all do the letters and they try and get somebody into a rehab? Well, I think sometimes, and I've done quite a few of them, but the thing is sometimes it can work and it's successful. It depends on where the person is and their own journey. Now, if somebody's at a trajectory where they're at the start of their using and they're still having fun, they're enjoying it, and what I mean by that, Russell, is that the consequences of their addiction is not outweighing the benefits. You know what I mean? If they're still getting lots of benefits from it, they're nowhere near probably ready to do anything about it. However, there is people, obviously, and they might be young, they're starting to have some serious consequences. The right circumstances are set up, the perfect storm, and it can work.
Jacob, how bad are the consequences for you right now? And talk to me about the intervention that your parents have made in your own life, mate.
The consequences are £20,000 worth of debt when I have no money.
Pretty serious. Okay.
And, yeah, it's quite serious. And just my family and my friends looking at me in a completely different light because I've lived basically a false life for the past year and a half.
You sound really sad, mate. Are you feeling a bit sad?
I am sad. Well, obviously I'm sad, yeah.
Tell me, what's the situation, Jacob? Tell me the situation. What are you using? What do you do?
Cocaine and alcohol. And I think it's a control thing for me. I'm not entirely sure what my actual problem is. It's just that once I start doing something, I tend to lose days. Yeah. And I just fuck everything up consistently. And then I'll have 2 weeks of trying to get myself back on track, and then it all goes tits up again.
Yeah, and because you open up the door again, because you start to open up the door again. So because you basically
how do you break that cycle,
Jacob? Because what's happening here is you're bullshitting yourself. Basically, you're saying to yourself that I've not got a problem. I can control this. I can manage my addiction. But in reality, you can't. You can't because everything. And you just have to look at the evidence. All you would do is if you were a betting man, you would look at.
He's got a gambling problem. Be careful.
Absolutely.
Have you got a gambling issue?
I've not done that for a couple of weeks, but yeah, that one.
Don't have a bet.
I don't have a bet. Whatever you do, don't do that either.
But Mark's right, you are bullshitting yourself. What are you saying, Mark?
What I'm saying is that you're in denial. The fact is that what you've done is you've rationalised and justified your behaviour. And what it is, it's the rose-tinted glasses thing. What it is when you just stop using, when you say it's a coke or an alcohol binge, as soon as you've stopped, you can see clearly the repercussions of your behaviour. You can see you're devastated, your dopamine's completely depleted, you feel crap, you're depressed. Right. And then, a couple of weeks later, you have the roast. It's like...
I know that, but why do I keep doing it? Because I have those realisations where it's like, yeah, I know this is really bad. I'm destroying all of my meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
But I'm destroying everything. Yeah, I somehow crawl back and do it all again.
Because it's not getting reinforced. What you're up against is your mind, that addictive part of you, that addictive self, the addictive mind that just looks for gratification, is more powerful than your rational, thoughtful, considered part of the brain. So what happens is basically you convince yourself. It's like you get into a ring with Tyson, right? What happens is you get smashed all over the place, right? And then what you do, you come out of that ring and you dust yourself down, you go, actually, and then a week goes by, 2 weeks goes by, or 2 months goes by, and you say, actually, I think I could have him. I think I could do him. I think I could do him. I think I could do Tyson, right?
Why do you keep thinking you can have Tyson, Jacob?
That's part of my problem, Russell. I keep thinking I can have Tyson, then I drink and I forget about it.
But it's selective amnesia. What you're suffering from is selective amnesia. What you're doing is you're forgetting. You know what I mean? Because you're not getting it reinforced. Now, me and Russell go to meetings, so we get it reinforced all the time that we're addicts, right? And if we didn't get it reinforced in the meeting, I'd tell Russell he's an addict. I'd say to him, Russell, you're an addict, you can't do this behaviour, right? So it's like I'm getting it reinforced all the time. You're out there in the wilderness. You know,
wilderness, Jacob.
This is the thing, right? I'm out in the wilderness thinking I can beat Tyson. But I'm in the midst of the problem at the moment.
Do you want to stop taking drugs, mate? Do you want to stop drinking and taking drugs or not?
Yeah, no, I do.
Have you used today?
I've had a drink today. I've not used today.
Okay, so tomorrow when we wake up, you start afresh. I mean, tomorrow's the 1st October. Is that the 1st October?
Brilliant time to start.
Absolutely.
Where do you live?
I live in Preston now. I used to live in Manchester, but when I got taken home to Preston.
So you've been brought back to your parents' house because of the stage. It sounds like you're 27 grand in debt.
Twenty. He's got 20.
20 grand.
20 grand. We've just stuck 7,000 more on.
Mark's fee is 7 grand.
just past that 70 me.
It's not looking good for you, Jacob. Seems to me, that you need to start taking this situation seriously. Now, we're joking, but we've got 33 years between us. You might need to shape up and get yourself around some people that are not drinking and using. You need to take it seriously and have a bit of a different vision for your life. Can you imagine a life without drinking and using or not?
I struggle because it is such a prominent part of culture, isn't it? Drinking all the time.
Not my bloody culture. What about you?
Well, I don't know. I struggle with that because, when all my friends and family, when they're not doing something that they're supposed to be doing, they're just drinking.
That is hard.
That's just how people fill time, isn't it?
You've got to get some people in your life that are not drinking and using, mate. Are you aware of the existence of 12-step abstinence-based fellowships?
Yes, I went to those for 2 weeks about 3 weeks ago.
2 weeks? Then you knocked it on the head and then you went back in the ring with old Tyson.
Then I got there, you know, then I gave Tyson's agent a call. But
thought you had a better idea. I think you need to go to... I think you need to... have you surrendered to the idea that you can't drink and take drugs? Or do you think, oh, maybe I can do it once in a while?
I know deep down that I can't. Because I always think I can have a couple.
So
and
listen,
then I wake up 3 days later.
So, Jacob, you've got it, right? For this to really work, honest to God, right, you've got to concede to your innermost self, right? So you've got... There's got to be a... And that... That requires a surrender. That means that it's over. The war is over. The fight with Tyson's finished. He is going to smash me every way, but, you know, he's going to knock me black and blue every time. And that's what you've got to get.
I'm never going to knock Tyson out.
Aye, exactly. And this is what you're up against is far more powerful than you on your own. And I mean that because your mind is the problem. Your mind's part of the addiction. The way that you think is part. You've neurologically wired your brain for a long, long time.
Yeah.
What's that noise? It must be. Is that Concorde going over?
Yeah, it was just a Concorde. No, it was.
I just lost track of time.
Jacob, you need to sort your life out a little bit, mate. Here's my suggestion to you.
That's why I phoned you, Russell.
Thank you, actually. Okay. Well done. All right, we'll do our level best. The first thing that I would like to suggest to you is that you give these fellowships another chance. And when you're there, sit and listen to what people are saying when they're talking about the nature of this disease. Let me tell you you know, you're mucking about in that and you're joining in with the jokes, and why wouldn't you? You're a decent geezer from up north. We can all have a laugh. But the reason I used to drink and take drugs is because I hate being myself. I hate being alive. I wish I was dead. I feel like I'm a disappointment to everyone in my life and I'm never going to get the things that I want. And I used to drink and take drugs to help me not feel like that. And it used to distract me a little bit, but it never did anything. So you got to get to the point, mate, where you're willing to try something different. And do you know what I've noticed about you? You live inside your head and you take your head more seriously. Even like while we're talking to you now, you've not got to that point, mate. I don't think where you're like, I'm truly destroyed, please help me, I don't know what to do. You're mucking around, you're larking around. I say you've got 5 years in you and you might not live through those 5 years. That's my verdict.
And you've got that from just this phone call?
Yeah, that's right, mate. Yeah, because I've not heard you talk about it seriously. I've not heard you say, like, I want help, I want to change.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jacob? Is that what Russell's saying?
I do want to change, but obviously it's daunting to know that you're going to have a phone call from Russell Brand, isn't it?
Absolutely, right. But the thing is, right,
imagine how my mum feels.
But Jacob, for yourself, honestly, just for yourself, you've got to take some action, right? So what I'd suggest, go back to the meetings, right? Try and get a connection with some of the people in the meeting. And with that, and then tomorrow, what we're talking about is no drink, no drugs, and you just, you know, and no gambling, none of it, right? And just go find, look on your way to find.
I don't gamble anymore. I've not done that for a few weeks, and I won't do that again.
Okay, though, that's cool. Well, so that's what you do moving forward.
Jacob, the only reason I'm being a little bit mean to you, mate, is because I recognise and identify with the frivolity that you're using to distract from the fact that you're in a lot of pain. And I think until you get to the point where you're willing to face that pain, you're going to have a little bit of a struggle. And I think if your life's got to the point where you're 20 grand in debt, where your parents have had to pull you home, where you're prepared to take a phone call from a person you don't know, you're in a serious, serious situation. And this is what I suggest to you. Get yourself to a 12-step fellowship meeting today and we'll be available to check in with you in another week. But absolutely. For you, mate, I think the verdict is no drink or drugs, one day at a time. You've proven again and again that you do not have the constitution for controlled drink and drug use. It's messing up your life. But what's really good, mate, is that there is an alternative to living in this way. There's a better life for you, and it's a shame because all the time you're wasting living like this in this cyclical behaviour, you're not living the life that you could be living, and that's something that I suggest that you start doing immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. I'll back that up too.
All right, Jacob, cheers, well done, Jacob. Mate. I didn't mean to be cold to you. You're a lovely bloke. You'll be all right, mate.
I appreciate it, thank you.
Well done, Jacob. Thanks for coming on, mate. Okay, thank you for coming on.
Bye. Thank you, Paul.
I'm being too harsh to people, aren't I? I'm being too harsh to them. What about when I had a go at him?
Aye, but that's, I mean, this is the idea
out
of it. It just sort of a wee bit of directive as well. So what, Philip, good cop, bad cop, is it? We're going to do our...
I don't see you getting on a police force with your criminal record. I think it's good cop, and like maybe you could be like Huggy Bear or something, like some sort of Glaswegian scumbag that I come to, like a snitch.
Like what?
What's have some sort of grass on the street.
Oh, grass? I'm not a grass.
I know that. I know. You've got a code.
Oh, you can
mark.
Call me many things.
You stick heroin up your ass all day long, but don't call me a grass.
Oh no! I remember. I found at one time when I was anyway. It's an awesome.
No, go on. I'm up for it.
I remember, right? There was this time when I was smuggling all this heroin back from Thailand one time, and I was in the toilet and I couldn't, I'd had it. Well, basically what had happened is I had it in there for about, well, it was a hash. I had hash in my body for about 3 days, and I absolutely,
I wouldn't want to smoke
absolutely.
That.
Yeah,
hash
exactly.
That's been up Mark for 3 days.
I know, and I was taking the dope from India into Thailand, and the thing was, I remember in this toilet, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'd been eating, and I'd been taking the laxative, but I'd been using heroin every day, so I'd been taking all the laxative to get it out of me. And then by the time the 3 days came, I thought, what does it matter? You know, like, it's been in there for 3 days. It's only 600 grams of hash. I don't believe you can die of hash. So I'll just like, I mean, if it just starts to fall, because I remember the story about every layer of cling foam, it takes 24 hours for the body acid to go through it. So I was sitting in this toilet and I wound up, this is ridiculous, man, I'm not recommending this to anybody, but I had this idea, there's a hose that you know, because you always clean your bum with a hose and stuff like that. And so I shoved up this hose up my arse and I injected water up it to sort of break down all the Bollinger's to get it out. And at the same time as that happened, they all started to come out and I seen a watch on the side of the toilet, and somebody had left their watch in the toilet. And I remember thinking, what a fucking result, I found a watch. I mean, and I always remember, like, Jesus, there I was in this absolute agony, but because I found a Timex watch, I felt as if
I'm one of life's winners. It's time for me to shine. I'm Mark Dempster, on top of the world. Mark, it's a real privilege to have you in here offering advice as a man who used his own bottom as a kind of secret suitcase. I think we've done okay. I think we've given some good advice, but of course the fact is that none of us are ever experts. Even you, as a Harley Street councillor, are still just another junkie trying to get one day at a time with the support of other people with this condition. Me, as one of the great entertainers of British history, still struggling with this condition 13 years down the line. But if we can do it, Mark, with our condition, with you and your misuse of garden equipment, can get to the position where you're allowed back into polite society, moderately polite, then anyone who's listening that's struggling with a disease of addiction, in whatever form that you find yourself suffering from it, there is hope for you if you're willing to reach out and take it. You've been listening to me, Russell Brand, on the Russell Brand Recovery Podcast. Thank you very much, Mark, for being such a great
guest. Russell. It's been great. Man,
do join us again. You probably will have to, because you're an addict. You're probably already addicted to the show. We don't even need to tell you.